Good to be here tonight. I was glad to get to come on the 4th of July and see the fireworks. Oh, yeah, and Philip spoke too. So it was good to be here for one of the nights to see how y'all did this. And then I show up tonight and get surprised with the order. After all, I was waiting to sing a song, but we didn't get to sing a song. So, but anyway, we'll get... You're the song leader of the bunch, so... But anyway... Glad again to be here, so thankful for the many times that I'm asked to come and speak. Grateful, Brother Terry, for asking, and Brother Farron for allowing me to get to be asked. And, of course, there have been some times that I've been asked to come when things weren't so grand for Brother Farron or his family. And sorry about that, but grateful that everything's hunky-dory tonight, unless I miss something. And, of course, Philip's not here tonight. Of course, I know he's only, about an hour and a half away. Anyway, so but of course we got his twin here to make up the difference. So same amount of hammers as usual. There's four, and then a redheaded stepchild's here too. So gentleness, or as the King James puts it, meekness. Meekness is a word that I would say we probably in our everyday language don't use as much as we would gentleness. When people think of what Jesus looked like, of course, we don't know. The Bible doesn't say except to say he was not a very good-looking man. The Bible does say he wasn't, as the King James puts it, comely to where he would be longed for. So he was a very plain-looking man, evidently. But that's about all we know about his appearance, other than we know his genealogy, so we know that he had a darker skin tone than us, so... You know, when we see paintings and TV movies about Jesus and he's depicted as a white man, we know that ain't right. Because we know as a Jew, he would have been a darker-skinned person. But still, there's a lot we don't know about how Jesus looked. Of course, it doesn't too much matter. But you know, sometimes we get paintings of Jesus as a real thin, frail, wimpy-looking man. No, I don't look anything like him. But I'm talking about the depictions. And you know, it could be the case tradition has him looking that way. I know one of the famous paintings of Jesus as a long-haired, frail, wimpy, thin-looking man. I couldn't find out. They said that was the artist himself who simply drew a picture of himself depicted as Jesus, and from what I've heard, that kind of has followed as a tradition over the years to depict Jesus looking like that artist. But nonetheless, I would say people who are not fans of Jesus wouldn't mind having him appear as a 60s flower child. But the reality of it is he was by trade a carpenter. So a carpenter is not going to be frail, wimpy, little bitty man that has no ability to lift more than 10 pounds. As a carpenter, he'd have been fairly physically fit, what any other person in his trade would look like in that regard. So, but you know, Jesus had a phrase in Matthew 11 where he says, "I am meek and lowly in heart." Meek or gentle. Does a person have to look weak to be meek? No. As a matter of fact, one of the things we'll look at tonight is misunderstandings about meekness, and that's one of them. Tonight, as we look at meekness or gentleness, one of the fruit of the Spirit of Galatians, I want us to look at 3 points. First, let's look at the definition of meekness. Second, we're going to look at some common misunderstandings of what meekness is. And then finally, we're going to look at some traits that work along with meekness or gentleness. So first, what's the definition? Well, if you're like me, you might have a tendency to get out your Strong's Concordance to look a word up to understand a little bit better. And in my studies, there were 3 different numbers that I came across in the New Testament for meekness. And there's a couple that are really different forms of the same word. And let's look at a couple of these. There's one word that's translated gentle or meek. It's found in Matthew 5:5. It's listed as under one of the Beatitudes. Uh-oh, is that what's going to be next year? Matthew 5:5. Jesus said, "Blessed are the meek, they shall inherit the earth." This same word is found in 21:5. "Tell you the daughter of Zion, behold thy king," speaking of Jesus, "cometh unto thee, meek and sitting upon a donkey." Then we go over to 1 Peter 3 and look at verse 4. The same Greek word. It's found in a description of a godly wife. "But let it be the hidden man of the heart, in that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price." The other main word, New Testament, Greek, Koine Greek word, translated meek in the King James. One example I've already mentioned, and that being in Matthew 11:29, where Jesus said of himself, "I am meek and lowly in heart." Now going back to that Greek word we looked at that's found in Matthew 5:5, that's defined as mild or humble. And then this one in Matthew 11:29 is defined as humble or gentle. Well, of course, all about the same thing. There's a little bit of a difference, at least in word choices. When it comes to meekness, though, defining that, the best definition I've heard is called strength under control. And an example of that has been given as a caged stallion. Think about a stallion. And what that horse is. Think of stallion, you may think of a wild horse. Maybe like me, you've seen on TV documentary on wild horses of the West United States. And of course, a horse is a pretty big animal, big enough to stomp a man to death. But you know, if you control that stallion, you get that wild stallion under control to where he's comfortable to be using his strength under control. If he's in a cage, he's going to be comfortable, not trying to butt his way out, kick his way out. Stallion has a lot of power, but in a cage, the right control of its emotions, that is strength under control. That is meekness or the gentleness that a Christian is supposed to have. One Old Testament definition for meekness says to submit self. Well, that's the whole point of Christianity, is to put self where it belongs, where God can be, where he belongs. Let's turn to Luke 9. Let's begin with verse 23. Jesus said, "If any man will come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me." To deny yourself means to empty yourself. Get yourself out of the way so you can make room for God. Let's turn to chapter 14 and verse 27. Jesus said, "And whosoever doth not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple." Well, what is a cross? It was a tool of execution. To bear your cross is to willingly put self to death. This is a choice. Jesus is saying, make a choice to do this. Then drop on down, verse 33. So likewise, whosoever he be of you that forsaketh not all that he hath, cannot be my disciple. He's not saying, turn your back on all your possessions and all the people you know to become a follower of Jesus. That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about turning your back on everything that you're not supposed to have as a Christian. It's to change your life from serving self to serving Him. Now let's go back to Luke 9. Continue on in that discussion. Verse 24 says, for whosoever shall save his life shall lose it. But whosoever will lose his life for my sake, the same shall save it. Now that might be a little bit of a tongue twister and a mind twister. So you sit down and look at it. He's saying, if you hold on to your life as is, you're going to lose your soul. You're not going to have eternal life. He says, but if you lose yourself, you will save your soul. Verse 26, for whosoever shall be ashamed of me and of my words, of him shall the Son of Man be ashamed, when he shall come in his own glory and in his Father's and of the holy angels. Well, there's supposed to be a comfort level in our relationship to God. If we're ashamed of him, then we're not comfortable in our relationship as his child. So we've seen the definition of meekness or gentleness. Now let's go on to some misunderstandings about what being meek or gentle is. One misunderstanding is, well, that's just a personality trait some people have, or just a trait that some people are born with. It's not something you really are required to have. It's just icing on the cake. Makes for an extra nice Christian. Well, that's not the case. Yeah, there are some people that are more inclined to this kind of way of living, and then there are people who are very much the opposite. Personality traits, though, sometimes are neutral, and of course, sometimes can be turned into something bad or something good. Not about just be whatever is natural to you, if being natural to you is sinning along the way. See, meekness is something that everybody as a Christian is supposed to have. Another mindset people might have about meekness is, well, this is something you'll just develop over time. As you get older, you just like you kind of stumble upon it. Well, that's not the case either. Something we have to choose to do. Let's look at Psalm 149, verse 4. For the Lord taketh pleasure in his people, for he will beautify the meek with salvation. So we can see that meekness is part of a person who God will save in the end. First half of this verse calls this group of people His people. It's the way God's people are supposed to be. We're supposed to be gentle. Well, in the famous phrase, people try to define meekness, or the first thought that comes to mind when they hear the word meekness is, meekness is weakness. Well, this is especially used by those who believe in might makes right. And, of course, that really is the idea that if you got the power to do it, you go ahead and do it. And the use of power is use of that which is right. And that's what you ought to do. Wield that power. Well, that's really an out-of-control use of power. And power isn't bad. But out-of-control power gives power a bad name. But, of course, a A person who is overly gentle would be a person who's timid, who doesn't use power the way it's supposed to be used. We can be so timid that we don't do anything for God. We just kind of sit back and just do nothing. Well, that might be what a person does by nature, by their nature, or it could be a person who sees that might does not make right, so it's got to be the opposite. And you know what happens sometimes when people misunderstand a teaching? We'll go from one extreme to the other to avoid that extreme. Well, that's not what God wants us to do. If we're gentle, then we're using our power in a proper way. Not that we shut it off. The true nature of gentleness compared to the meekness is weakness makes me think, for example, of something that I've seen in a lot of movies that depict good versus evil. The main battle toward the end, where the climax is, has the good guy fighting the bad guy. And the good guy, for a period in that battle, midway or maybe early on to midway, isn't really doing that well. He might not be getting beat to a pulp, but he's just not really winning either. And you might be like me, you're like, oh man, come on, don't lose this thing. You got to defeat this evil power or this bad thing's going to happen. But then, here he comes. They're toward the end. Here comes what appears to be a reserve that was just waiting for the right time to come to strike. And he uses his strength there at the end to defeat that enemy. That's exciting to see. Evil being overcome by good. And in that way, of course, it makes it extra thrilling. But meekness isn't weakness. Timidness is weakness. Let's look at our final point. We've seen the definition of meekness or gentleness. We've seen some misunderstandings. Now, looking at our final point, some traits that work alongside meekness. One trait we've already talked about in the definition, submission. Now, submission is also a word that's misunderstood by a lot of people, like meekness is. A lot of times people hear submission and they see that as a dirty word. Ooh, especially in our country where might is right is a very common mindset. So, for a person to submit someone or to something, man, that is it's just a bad choice. Why would somebody do that? Why would they waste their time that way? It's really the thought that we're taught when it comes to submission, the way we're supposed to look at it. You know, our culture teaches us to be so selfish. So naturally, submission is the complete opposite. The idea that a person would submit to God. Well, why do that when you can use your life your way? You only have one life, right? Why waste it? Well, is submission to the right authority a waste? No, just like meekness isn't a waste. That's a proper use of power, proper use of strength. Of course, not only are we told, well, how dare you consider submitting to God when you can live your own life, another area where submission is looked upon as a dirty thing, an awful thing, just a ridiculous backward way of thinking would be, of course, in marriage. Why would a woman submit to her husband?
that's so 1950s. Why would people do that? So Ephesians 5 gets looked at as one of those sections of the Scripture that, oh, if it only wasn't really there. People like to get the knife out, get the scissors out, at least in their own mind, and snip it out, pretend it's not even there. Or think, well, no. Apostle Paul, in writing Ephesians, was simply speaking of how to live as a Christian in that culture. It was a cultural command. Nothing to do with today. Any excuse people can come up with to not obey God, they're going to do it. Now, our culture has changed quite a bit from the 1950s. Mainly for the worse. Does God look upon women as an inferior human? No. Does God look at the role of a woman as a role of inferiority? No. But for a woman to submit, instead of leading the household, but to submit to the husband leading the household, oh man. Man, that's almost the unpardonable sin in our culture. How dare you allow male chauvinism to overtake your life, dictate the way you live? Did God ever say that's the way a woman should be? That's the way a man should treat a woman? Abusively? Derogatorily? Oh. Once again, if we let our culture paint Christianity and paint God and paint an obedient servant of God in a particular way, that's what they'll do. Submission. Well, when looking at Ephesians 5 and the role of the husband, the role of the wife, the role of the mother, the role of the father, the role of the children, well, culture has it all upside down, doesn't it? Not only does it say the woman should lead, that is unless the child wants to. Or maybe they would say, well, you know, the woman should lead because she's been beat down over the years. It's now her turn to lead. Let her lead. Then when they have children, then let the child lead the family. Our culture, in this instance, wants us to call evil good and good evil. Right way, the wrong way, the wrong way, the right way. Well, that's nothing new. We can go back to Isaiah's time. Evil and good being called the opposite. So, culture says meekness is weakness, might is right. Why in the world would a person want to be meek? Submission is for men because men have abused their power over the years. It's their turn to submit. It's their turn to be beat down. That's not the only area where our culture wants to say, well, there's been an abuse in the past, therefore there needs to be a reverse abuse in order for retribution or correction. Want to do that in other areas of life. Not only is might not right, reverse abuse isn't right either. We're not correcting any kind of wrong or perceived wrong by doing the opposite. Once again, one extreme breeding another extreme, or a person seeing the evil one extreme and going to the other extreme so they don't do the evil of the other extreme. God isn't about avoid this sin by doing that sin. God isn't functioning and doesn't expect a Christian to function on either extreme of human thinking. God is balanced, and so should His followers. A Christian should be meek. A Christian should be submissive to their leader, King Jesus. Christians should also practice what the King James says in Galatians 5:23, temperance or self-control. Y'all have already looked at. Basic self-control, you could say. Self-control is involved in gentleness. Because if you don't have control over yourself, you're not going to be gentle. You'll be an extreme on power or the other. You'll be the timid, or you'll be the abusive wielder of power, of wild power. We need a basic self-control. It's really going to be the foundation of all of our life. Otherwise, we're going to do a lot of things the wrong way. There in the verse prior, in the fruit of the Spirit, Galatians 5:22, another trait that works right along with meekness or gentleness is peace or peacefulness. In this verse, peacefulness is defined by Strong's Concordance as quietness, rest. Some people who are very excited by nature, high-strung, fidgety, they don't see quietness as restfulness. That's holding me down and just makes me want to explode. But rest, everybody wants rest. If we don't get enough rest, we're not going to be at rest. We're not going to feel as good. We're not going to think as well. We're not going to be our best. Well, when we're quiet or at rest, we're not tense. Whether you're an outgoing person or a shy, quiet person, either one can be tense, be fidgety, nervous, not at rest. A person not at rest is going to be a happy person. See, if we practice the fruit of the Spirit, all nine of them, we'll be happier people. Our lives will be, yes, more fruitful. Be better. A person at peace is a person that is going to be glad they're a servant of God. Another trait that works alongside meekness is humility, or the act of being humble. You know, some people look at humility as about what they look at meekness as. Well, you wouldn't want to be that. That's of course, you know, they have the weakness mindset. They would say, well, if you're humble, that's more like humiliation. But humility is defined as being cast down or brought low. Well, that doesn't sound very positive. But if something that is not supposed to be exalted is cast down and is put in its proper place, right? If something that is in a high position that's not supposed to be is brought low, that's where it's supposed to be. Well, a person that's not humble is not where they're supposed to be. So their life isn't going to be where it's supposed to be. Let's look at James 4:10. We sing a song based upon this. James 4:10, humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord. And if you do this, He shall lift you up. Well, Jesus said, in the gospel accounts, He said, whoever wants to be the greatest should be a minister or a servant or a slave. Isn't that the opposite? If a person is the leader of
of a household, especially in some cultures, then they would have someone who would be considered a servant, a slave, or maybe a housekeeper or whatever. Which position, if you had a choice, would you prefer? Well, most people say, I want to be the leader. I don't want to be the one at the bottom of the totem pole, the one doing all the work, or whatever, however the person wants to look at it. But you see, God says, humble yourself, and I'll do the exalting. You exalt yourself, well, I can't very well lift you up above that. Humility is a choice, because pride is a very common choice that we make. We'd rather do the things our way instead of God's way. Another trait that works alongside meekness is long-suffering or patience. Let's turn to 1 Peter 2. 1 Peter 2, beginning with verse 18. Servants, be subject to your masters with all fear. Not only to the good and gentle, but also to the froward. Well, the opposite of the good and the gentle. I'm at the kind of master or employer that makes it hard to be a good employee of. Well, this is thankworthy if a man for conscience toward God endure grief, suffering wrongfully. Well, what glory is it if when ye be buffeted for your faults, ye shall take it patiently? But if, when you do well and suffer for it, you take it patiently, this is acceptable with God. You find something along these same lines in Matthew 5. Going back to the Sermon on the Mount, we look at the Beatitude. We go to Matthew 5, begin with verse 44. Jesus said, "But I say unto you, love your enemies. Bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you." Now, why would he command this? Well, he's commanding us to do some things that we wouldn't normally do. But we need to do. He says there's a purpose for this, that ye may be the children of your Father which is in heaven. For he maketh his sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sendeth rain on the just and the unjust. Well, he isn't always treated fairly either. But he still treats those who treat him fairly with blessings. He says you're to treat other people who treat you unfairly, fairly. They didn't earn it, did they? No. Neither did the evil man earn the rain that keeps his life going. But God gives it to him out of his mercy, out of his grace, out of his nature, out of a trait that he has that is needed. It helps all. For if you love them which love you, what reward have you? Do not even the publicans or the tax collector of the day who are very corrupt the same? Well, the average person is going to treat those well who treat them well. Bad guys will do that. But Christians are supposed to do more. Well, in the same Sermon on the Mount, he mentions going the second mile. Go the distance for somebody above and beyond what is expected. If you salute your brethren only, what do ye more than others? Do not even the publicans, the tax collectors, once again, also do this. Christians are not supposed to be just like everybody else. We're not supposed to just be fair to those who are fair to us. Well, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. Otherwise, I might stab you in your back. Well, that's the mindset of the world. So, back to 1 Peter 2. If you're working for somebody, if you have a boss who's rude to you, don't give him the rudeness back. Yeah, he might deserve that in return. Or that'll teach him. Well, that might teach him that, oh, I need to change, but that's not the right way to teach him. And a lot of times, well, if you return the evil to them, what'll they do? They will fire you
You deserve it. Even though you thought, well, I'm just giving them a taste of their own medicine. This is for their own good. Well, that's what you told yourself. That ain't the way to go about it. You can help them out of their problem without giving it to them. So, we're told those who are our bosses, those who are in authority over us, who mistreat us, we don't mistreat them. We treat them fairly even though they did not deserve it. It says, if a man for conscience toward God endure grief and suffering wrongfully, hold on now, for conscience toward God, well, they know they ought to be acting a certain way toward God or obeying God in a certain way. They know that this is a way they should respond, doing what's right even when right is not given to that person. Or even hereunto were ye called, because Christ also suffered for us. They ought to be willing to suffer for Him. It says, leaving us an example. Think about the mistreatment Jesus received on this earth more than once. Well, if He returned evil for evil, what good would that have done us? Stooping down to the level of His corrupt creation, that is, the corrupt choices of His creation, well, what good would that have done Him? What good would that have done to creation? Would have done us any good today, would it? He was true to His nature. He did what was right, even when it was hard. Long-suffering, patience, that works alongside meekness. And the final thing we'll look at, works alongside meekness, is wisdom. James 3:13 uses the phrase, the meekness of wisdom. If you remember, a few months ago when we looked at wisdom, we looked at this passage and we talked about the definition of wisdom. Not knowledge, but knowledge properly applied. In verse 13, we see a good general definition of wisdom. Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conduct his works with meekness of wisdom. Verses 14 through 16, we see the opposite of true wisdom. If you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not, and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. Where envying and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. Verse 17, we see wisdom's traits. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, unintended, not by the Holy Spirit, but by me, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And then we see in verse 18 the end result of the practice of wisdom. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. So tonight we've seen 3 points about gentleness or meekness. We've seen the definition. We saw some misunderstandings. We've also seen some traits that work alongside it.